Hello and welcome to the F1 Strategy Report for 2018. My name is Michael Laminato and this is Round 3, the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Sebastian Vettel and Valtteri Bottas were locked in a strategic duel two-thirds of the way into the race when a lap 40 safety car handed the advantage to the Finn. But a puncture with two laps remaining sent Bottas into retirement, and with Vettel out of the picture with a flat spot, Lewis Hamilton cruised to what he described as an undeserving victory. Well done, Baku. To look back on the chaotic Azerbaijan Grand Prix, I'm joined by Chris Medland from Racer. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm very well, mate. How are you?
Really good, considering that, yes, the hype train delivered for the second year in a row for Azerbaijan. We got another, really exciting Grand Prix with another probably unexpected winner in Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, it's strange to call Lewis an unexpected winner, isn't it? But he definitely was. Baku just, it promised so much in 2016 and then definitely failed to deliver that year. But since then, I think everyone has really sort of grown to attack the circuit and take it on. And it is a challenging track and it just seems to throw up these crazy races where I think maybe some incidents that we get in it wouldn't normally cause such chaos. But because it's a street track and still so fast, we get some crazy results. So yeah, it was an exciting one. It was certainly one that I think will have caught the attention of a lot of people if they weren't really taken by the season yet. But three winners in four races as well, it's really opened things up.
I'm always worried when we get to these sort of tracks. It doesn't have a lot of history, but there's always a lot of hype around us having a good race. But I suppose, as Lewis said before the race, and maybe this was a little bit forecasting what would be his own success, although he didn't actually have to overtake anyone, on his easy to overtake meter that he's been bringing to every race, this is the fifth easiest track to overtake on, apparently. So I suppose that already sets it up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the long straight, isn't it? It's, 2.1 kilometres. I know it's not a straight. There's plenty of kinks in it, but they're flat out for so long that the slipstream is huge. So it doesn't matter if you've dropped a long way back earlier in the lap. You get pulled back in by the car in front. So, there's quite a big window where we talk about cars being tough to follow in Formula 1, but this track seems to almost negate that issue by having such a long, long straight that pulls them together. And it's wide enough. There's a big braking zone in the turn one, and it's a difficult one. So that opens things up. And just the fact that it was a street circuit is dusty and tricky, and that means people make mistakes. So nobody could, I think, really, Valtteri Bottas was the only guy who could turn around yesterday and say he didn't make a mistake all day. Mm-hmm. And that should have resulted in a win, I guess. But for anyone else, they all had moments they could point to where they did something wrong. And that normally means that they're going to lose a position or something's going to go wrong in their race.
Now, you talk about the conditions, and this was really an overarching theme for the entire Grand Prix. Yes, the dustiness and usual lack of grip conditions for a street circuit that is, of course, only used once a year. But wind was really high on the talking point agenda this weekend, even usurping that fun fact that this is the only Grand Prix below sea level or whatever it is. How bad was it? You were there on the ground. Was it as terrifying as everyone was making it out? Certainly we saw some cars come into trouble and almost crash even on the formation lap.
Yeah, it was actually really, really windy. I was in a commentary box for all the sessions, and that was getting sort of shaken around quite a lot. But it was more the gusts. So every now and then you'd stop noticing it, and then you'd hear a bit of a sort of bang as just a wall of wind hit the windows. And it was. You were looking out at the flags, and they were, you know, completely horizontal and flat out, really, really windy. And you could see that it was going to be a challenge out there for the drivers, but that's why they paid the big bucks. You know, it's to be fair, I think it's rare we go to any venue and it's completely still. There's normally a degree of wind. It was just that this was much more severe, and the sort of nature of the fact that the final section that's flat out was next to the coast, but inside that you had buildings that was channeling the wind, so creating different kind of angles and directions. It was just all quite unpredictable, but I thought it was great. It was a bit of a strange phenomenon because obviously people watching at home on television can't physically see it, so they see a car struggling, and it's not like you can see rain on the track or similar. So it just you can see the result of the wind that it's affecting the cars, but you can't actually see the wind itself. So it's quite strange, but added an extra challenge. I liked it.
An extra dimension, I guess, we're not used to in Formula One, and I suppose that plays into a certain degree, although who's to say whether it's always this windy at this time of year in Baku. But this race was run 2 months earlier earlier than it normally is. And the more major effect that had was that it was quite cool on the weekend as well. And that really had an effect on the tyres, which ended up, of course, having an effect on the way the strategies played out. Even the Ultrasoft, which is, you know, nominally the coolest weather tyre, as the softest tyre that was brought to this race, really struggled with graining. And so we had this situation where it seemed like it was going to be more favourable to run most of the race on the Supersoft. And to that effect, we saw Mercedes and Red Bull and Ferrari try to start the race on Supersoft in Q2. But unfortunately, that win that you mentioned prevented Kimi Raikkonen from doing so. So we should have had this interesting strategic variation for the start of the race. Do you feel like that could have, and this is always one of those great hypothetical questions because everything changed on lap one, but do you feel like that could have really created a different bit of tension given Raikkonen and Vettel would have been on different strategies?
Yeah, before the race started, I was pointing that out in like a pre-race spotter's guide that Kimi could be the key to it, and that if he... In my head, like you say, you're thinking of, well, if everything goes cleanly, this will happen. And it was that I saw Kimi in sixth, staying in sixth, but staying with the pace of the five in front and then needing to pit first. So he would just trigger everyone else's reactions, and that they'd all be, based on the pace we'd seen over the weekend and also at the first three races, I thought they'd all be within striking distance of each other, or at least fairly close, and everyone would have to react. So you'd have... If Seb was leading and Kimi was sixth, there was a chance that Kimi pits, and then the two Red Bulls in front of him had to pit, and then the two Mercedes in front of him had to pit, and then Seb was last, and he might get undercut by somebody. So it was going to be tricky because basically three drivers at least were going to lose out in that scenario. But then typically for Baku and typically for Kimi, when there was a lot of promise there, there seemed to be... It all sort of went away on the first lap, and yeah, he had that contact with Ocon, and we never quite got to see it play out. But I mean, the tyres really struggled because the same with the sort of overtaking effect you have into turn one, but it's such a long run from, I think it's turn 16, where they're flat out. And okay, there's two kinks that are fairly high speed early, but then it's something like 30 seconds that they're flat out for, very close to, and the tyres cool down, so they get really cold, and that then means they hit the brakes for turn one, struggle there, but then they get on the power at turn one with very cold tyres, and they end up graining. So it's just kind of like the characteristics of the track that lead to that. And again, it's just, you know, it's different, it's something that they don't normally, a challenge that drivers don't normally face during the season. It's a bit unique, and that's why I think it's cool.
Do you feel like this could be an opportunity for the Hypersoft tyre to appear next year in Baku? We know these tyres are already two stops softer than they were last year, but to take them even softer again could help to spice up the tyre strategy even more next year.
Yeah, I think so. The way the race went on Sunday, the Supersoft clearly could last too long as a kind of... middle tyre. I know the Ultrasoft itself, I think Hartley did 21 laps on it, something like that, so that was realistically too long. That immediately made everything a one stop, but you had to accept the teams didn't know that for certain before we got into Sunday, so you still had a degree of difference. I think it was Hartley and Grosjean at the back of the field both started on the softs to try something different, and then most people went for the super soft, but there was still some ultra softs, so you had some variety. I think if we came next year with the same tyres, everyone would be, well, this is a nailed on one stop, we all want to get on this tyre at the start and then change to this tyre on this lap, and it would be dull. So yeah, I think Pirelli would have to bring the Hypersoft next year if that's assuming they've got just the Hypersoft. I'm sure by then we'll have another two or three even softer compounds where Pirelli's biggest challenge is just coming up with a name for it.
There are enough colours, we need a Pantone chart to start analysing what we're going to start colouring them all at that point. Maybe we can make a transparent one somehow. That'd be very exciting, wouldn't it?
That would be cool. We should get one that changes colour with heat, you know, whether it's cold or hot,
just like giant mood bracelets on all of the tyres.
Yeah, so whoever's got the most tyre life left has got the brightest coloured tyre.
Oh, you could be onto something.
It gives the driver something to look at as well.
Yeah. Oh,
I tell you.
Have a chat to Liberty about this one. This is innovation right here.
All for the show.
All for the show. Pirelli previewed before the race that the Supersoft tyre, because it was lasting so well, would be the tyre to start on, or at very minimum that they suggested the Ultrasoft was not an ideal starting tyre. And all of a sudden, for those who were forced to start on the Ultrasoft, those in the top 10 who needed the Ultrasoft to qualify in the top 10, had this opportunity, because there was a lap one safe safety car caused by, I guess, what we perhaps will start calling the standard lap one collisions in Baku. Some drivers, of course, didn't really get much of a choice because they had crashed, Kimi Raikkonen being one of them. Sergio Perez also picked up some damage. But this transferred them onto what transpired to be actually quite a good strategy. And we're going to analyze a little bit later Carlos Sainz versus Sergio Perez, because they were on a similar place on the track at that point, but ended up in relatively different positions by the time we got to the end of the race. But that safety car ultimately played a role, but the middle part after that safety car, or between the two safety cars, I suppose, everything sort of was just going at its own pace, wasn't it? We had this race unfolding between the top three. Lewis Hamilton was struggling a little bit with his tyres and then counted himself out by stopping a little bit early on lap 22. But what really became interesting was this sort of showdown we had between Vettel and Bottas, where neither of them really wanted to pit, it almost seemed like.
Yeah, I was certain that Vettel was going to try and run long enough to put on the ultra soft and go to the end, because he'd gone so far into the race. And his pace was still quite good, and that felt like he was covering off the potential for Bottas to do anything differently to him, or anything that was potentially quicker. And that, as you say, Lewis had backed himself into a corner, making that mistake, locking up and damaging his tyres and having to pit earlier. So I felt like, you know, Ferrari should have been focused on Bottas at that point. But maybe perhaps when we criticise them for completely ignoring Raikkonen and what he can do, that they were doing the same with Bottas. Because when Seb came in, I think there was 20 laps to go, 21 laps to go, somewhere in that region, and they stuck on the soft. And I'm thinking, you've done longer stint on the super soft already. We've seen a Toro Rosso do this long on the ultra soft, and the track's getting better, and there's still a chance that you get something like a safety car, which means the tyres won't have to do that whole run at full speed, but you will be able to come in and pit then anyway if you want to, if you feel like they're not going to sort of survive to the end. And the fact, as you say, with the weather, it being cooler, the warm-up was going to be easier on the ultra soft, it just all made sense. So I was really surprised to see Vettel then just do what Hamilton had done for such a short run, and that really opened the door. Then Bottas and Mercedes, who had been, I think, probably watching what Vettel was doing and trying to force him into something out of the ordinary, thought, right, door's open here. And Bottas was excellent towards the end of that stint on the super softs, the times he was pulling, and that was when you could see the difference. I think Bottas was setting fastest laps and extending that lead, even though Vettel was on new tyres, but they were softs. So that surprised me, and I think Red Bull were doing the same. All four of them obviously were hoping for a safety car that gave them a free stop, and they just would all walk to the end basically. But it was Bottas that for a while anyway profited from that.
I like that you mentioned there the idea that Ferrari perhaps discounted Valtteri Bottas, because it's been a something of a trend in Bottas's Mercedes career that on days when the Mercedes doesn't have natural pace, where they're struggling a little bit to extract what I suppose we're saying at this point of the year is the maximum potential of that car, he seems to outperform Lewis Hamilton. That was the case again this weekend, where, you know, the car struggled a lot on Friday and they managed to find some more pace in time for qualifying on Saturday, but then in the race it wasn't quite as together as Ferrari, and Bottas was the one who shone through there. Do you think that underrates him a little bit, the fact that he seems to be able to maybe drive around the Mercedes when it's not performing at its best?
Yeah, I do. I think more because last year it seemed that he struggled with that at one spell, and yeah, they said the car was a diva. It started last year, they started with a difficult car, and Bottas looked pretty good. I mean, he took pole in Bahrain, won in Russia, he was really in the frame, and then obviously had the retirement in Spain that put him immediately a long way adrift of Lewis, and suddenly then in that dynamic of that team, you're going to struggle to get kind of enough backing from the team to get back there, but also just from yourself to believe you're going to turn that around in your first season with Mercedes. And then Lewis came alive in the middle part of the year as the car improved, and I mean, there's no doubting Lewis was excellent to go on and win the title, but yeah, Valtteri had shown that, you know, if everything's not perfect, he was dealing with it better at spells. And this year has started very similarly. We never really saw what he could do in Melbourne because of his crash in Q3, and then you're just starting out of position and it was impossible to overtake there. But since then, I've been really impressed with him, and he was devastated yesterday, as the whole team were around him, that was, you know, he should have won China. He was the best driver on the day. He pulled out a brilliant lap to jump Seb, and I think he was pretty confident. He'd done it before, that he was going to do it again and under pressure hold Seb off. And that didn't happen. So he did well to pick himself up, come here, produce another brilliant performance that suddenly looked like it was, you know, there was still some luck. That safety car meant he got the free stop. But even without it, he was going to pit, put on the ultra soft, be within 10 seconds, I think, of Vettel, easily within 10 seconds, and be attacking him towards the end of the race. And it was easy to overtake there. So I think he would have got it done. And he knew that he'd done nothing wrong. And then it fell away from him again. And people are talking about Lewis Hamilton winning a race. Lewis now leads the championship and has a big advantage over Valtteri. And it's, you know, it's the bridesmaid situation again. And I think people did notice, you know, that there's no doubt that people are talking about how well Valtteri drove and that he deserved to win. But when you look back in 12 months' time, that will be a very, very small side note to whatever happens in the rest of the season.
The waiting game for Bottas to try and pull that trigger that would have given him the best chance to win, which was to pit under a safety car, notwithstanding that he might have been able to pull it off on that last in anyway, as you said, was really interesting, because it was a really obvious way that we were able to see teams try to shape their strategy around the likelihood of a safety car. And I mean, this race, even from Friday, had that vibe where you felt like there would be multiple safety cars. And it did happen. As luck would have it, of course, it worked out for him in a relatively high-profile way. It was a Red Bull Racing intra-team crash. I don't feel like I really need to explain it, because everyone probably would have seen it, but it's worth talking about, because it was, of course, really the defining moment of this race that set off that last 10 laps that decided the order and allowed Hamilton to win this Grand Prix. There was a lot of fighting between Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen for the entire race, and we know that Red Bull Racing doesn't like to enact team orders, but around this circuit where crashing was such an enormous risk, and where the defensive driving from Verstappen, and of course we know Daniel Ricciardo's aggressive overtaking strategies, really pit them against each other quite closely. We saw them rub tyres at one point. Do you feel like that this should have been a little bit on the team to have prevented this by asking them to... Well, I don't even know. I mean, they say they did ask them to back off and they clearly didn't.
I think... I mean, we didn't hear every radio message. I think the team needed to have a word with Verstappen, actually, at one point in that race, because watching it myself, it was great that they were allowed to race. I do praise Red Bull for that, because we've only got 20 cars on the grid, and if every team doesn't let their teammates race each other, there's certain Grand Prix that are going to be so dull when you've got something potentially great to go on. And they're two brilliant drivers, so you want to see Verstappen v Ricciardo wheel to wheel, but you leave a little bit of margin with your teammate, you certainly should. And you could see it with the way Ricciardo raced Verstappen. He did do that, certainly early on. There was the two times, as you mentioned, he went around the outside of turn one and he left space on the inside of one. And the first time, I think, is when they touched, and Ricciardo had left so much space that he almost got a little bit wide and had to just come back a touch away from the wall on the outside. But Verstappen was going to race him as hard as he was racing anyone and was trying to squeeze him out there a bit, so they touched. The next time, the same thing happened, and they just avoided contact. And by the third time, you noticed that Daniel went later on the brakes but cut in tighter, even though he was on the outside of turn one, to not leave a car space, or not leave enough of one, basically to say to Max, you know, I've been decent enough twice now and you've nearly stuck me in the wall, like, you're not even going to get the chance to do it this time. And I felt that was on Verstappen for racing as hard as you would anyone else. And we're talking tiny, tiny percentages. I'm not saying that you say after you by any stretch, because there's always a lot of needle in intra-team fights, but you do just need to give it that tiny little bit more. And I felt Max wasn't doing that, but that was then on Red Bull. You know, they're in the heat of the race and he's a racing driver. You would push it hard, and the team should have then gone to him, that was a little bit much, you know, don't do that again. So when Daniel came around the next time, that he, because he could race him differently then as well, you know, maybe he would give him the inside line because he thinks he'd get him on the exit or whatever. So I do feel that, yeah, Max needed a little bit of a message in that scenario, because then it led to Daniel being more aggressive with the next move. And then speaking to Daniel after the race, he said that he found the outside was not a place he wanted to be because of how close to crashing they'd been twice. He said he kept seeing the wall coming at him and he was getting forced out there. So that's why he decided he was going to try and double bluff him and get to the inside. So you shouldn't feel in danger from your teammate. And it seemed that Daniel did. And that's why then he changed his approach and we got the incident that we got. But I want to praise Red Bull, to be honest, because they let them race, they let them get to that point, and they didn't call it off. So yeah, there's just a message or two to say, just think of the margins you're leaving each other, but good on them for not just panicking completely and going, oh, they might crash, we better stop it.
What it immediately meant was that we had this safety car period where Bottas was able to change those tyres and maintain the lead after the safety car, and we had this great moment in lap one where it seemed like the lead was open to almost anybody from Ferrari and Mercedes. He took a lunge, did Sebastian Vettel, down the inside of Valtteri Bottas at turn one. He didn't pull it off, but I couldn't help but feel like there are all these parallels over the last couple of races when we're talking about overtaking moves into lap one and big braking moves. And I like that he sort of said this, you know, I had to give it a go because you wouldn't want to leave it undone. I feel like that's becoming a weird theme so far this year about whether or not drivers make these moves into turn one. But I mean, do you feel like he still had a couple of laps after that safety car that he had to put it all on the line there, given the power of the slipstream at this track?
I think, but you mentioned the power of the slipstream. He had Lewis Hamilton right behind him, and Kimi was there too. And it was just, if you're not the leader, you're more likely to get caught up in an incident. And it just, the door did open slightly. So I liked Seb's approach that it was risky, clearly, because it didn't come off. And it probably, if in the cold light of day you sat down and analysed the likelihood of him being able to make it stick or not, it was unlikely. But it wasn't a 0% chance, and he suddenly saw that chance and just in the moment took the opportunity, or tried to. And I think that was a really good mindset for him to have, because he was leading the championship. He felt he should have won the race anyway, because I think he thought he'd done everything right, and he was surprised when Bottas came out ahead of him. Again, because I feel Ferrari hadn't warned him that's the guy he was racing. And so he felt, right, I'm going to have to do it on the track. And he just, you know, it was Valtteri who didn't throw it down the inside from a long way back in Bahrain. And I maintain, having watched the onboard, that was too far back. There was nothing to lose, because he would have just gone sailing straight on at turn one and rejoined. But that, I'm pretty sure that was a less than 5% chance that was ever going to come off if he'd have tried that move in Bahrain. Vettel, I think, had more of a chance here and saw that it was Valtteri and thought, if I throw it down the inside, he's not going to be overly aggressive, just because that's the way Valtteri tends to race. So he thought, well, what have I got to lose? And he backed himself, and it didn't quite come off, but that's the mindset I want to see from these guys. And I think it shows how competitive they know the season's going to be. Vettel couldn't look to build it like last year when it was him and Lewis, and it was, you're either your first or your second, and one of the two is good enough. This was, If you're not winning races and capitalising now, there's going to be other races where you might be sixth because the car's just not good enough. So, I liked what that showed. And like you say, we've had it a few times this year, and the drivers seem to be pretty brave and willing to go and take those risks and try and show that they are, they've got the confidence and the ability to go and try and pull off these moves, because you do have to be brave and late on the brakes with these cars. You do have to commit to it, and that's why I quite like it. I think it's, you know, if a move comes off, it's proper. So he went for it, he had to, and good on him.
Vettel eventually dropped, he did drop to fifth, which eventually became fourth, though, because what should have then been a Valtteri Bottas win was undone by a puncture on the front straight. Quite a serious one, of course, when you're travelling at 300-odd kilometres per hour. Tyre was completely gone. It ended his race. A very emotional ending for him, but of course that did open the door to Lewis Hamilton winning. Behind Hamilton, though, was Kimi Raikkonen. Perhaps unlikely, given he had a crash on the first lap and had to stop. And in third place, Sergio Perez, his first podium finish since here 2 years ago in Azerbaijan, formerly the European Grand Prix. Two well-managed races, I suppose, given enormous stints on the soft tyre and also just to keep out of trouble for the rest of the race. I want to compare here, though, we've got Raikkonen and Perez to the fortunes of Romain Grosjean and Carlos Sainz, two drivers who perhaps could have finished in those positions had things gone differently. Let's start with Carlos Sainz, because Renault had terrific pace at the start of the race, of course on that ultra-soft tyre, but Sainz, one of those drivers who chose not to stop behind that first lap safety car to ditch onto a super soft or a soft compound tyre. Do you feel like, I mean, this is Renault's best result since they've come back to Formula One as a manufacturer, so in that sense, a good result, notwithstanding the fact that Hülkenberg crashed, but do you feel like there could be a sense here that there could have been more on the table?
Yes, because it was Baku and it was crazy, and I think every driver will look at things they could have done better or differently, but I think actually Renault called it right at the time, in that, yeah, Perez made that stop at the end of the first lap because he had damage. He'd been hit from the rear by Sorokin, and that in turn had nudged him into the back of Raikkonen's car in front of him. So he was pretty sure he had rear damage, but it also damaged the front wing, and Force India thought that would fail. So they were kind of forced into their move, and I don't think they would have automatically pitted at the end of the first lap with Perez if he'd had a clean one, if he'd have been where Carlos was. And, you know, Carlos was running high because of Ocon then being punted out by Raikkonen and Raikkonen getting damage. Carlos was already running pretty far forward, so to throw away that track position was... Renault didn't need to at that stage. They had more to lose, and from there I think they raced pretty well. I think the pace, as you say, shown in that first stint, while Red Bull was struggling with battery sort of, I think it was charging, and therefore having less deployment, was impressive. But then you could see once Red Bull got it together that the Red Bull was the quicker car, and Carlos just seemed to keep it clean and keep out of trouble. But I think, you know, the car's pace, it was the fourth quickest car at times, but realistically it was fifth quickest. The Force India in qualifying and through practice sessions was just a quicker car, and Force India's race was compromised by obviously Ocon being out at the start and then Perez needing that pit stop, and he was coming through on pace through the field during the race. So I don't think Renault can be too upset about missing out on third there, because third only happened thanks to Vettel's error, and again from the Bottas puncture. So really there was one car that got between them and Perez, and Perez had a quicker car during the weekend. So I think they were roughly where they should have been. Yeah, maybe one position further up if Carlos felt brave against Seb when he was struggling in the final few laps. That would have been it. But for me, I think fifth was a solid return. It was more Hülkenberg is the one you turn around and look at. And second year in a row that he was running fifth on the road in a race that was opening up as having big opportunities, and he put it in the wall. And I've done an interview with Bob Fernie before where I've asked about Hülkenberg and why he's never had that podium, and he said you've got to be careful because you get a reputation that when the opportunity arises you choke wasn't the word he used, mm-hmm. to be fair to him, but that was, you know, the implication that you miss the opportunity, and then each next time one comes up you add pressure to yourself that you've missed it before, so you better not miss it again, and then it becomes harder to take. So if I was Renault, my bigger annoyance would be the fact that you didn't have both cars running there at the end.
Contrast that though, the Sergio Perez podium with Romain Grosjean, who was on the same strategy and who was following Perez only about 4 seconds behind him, I think, behind the safety car. It would look like it should have been eventually a good weekend for him after he had a pretty rough time of it in qualifying, where he required a gearbox change in Q1, qualified and started last. Again, we talk about the conditions that just seem difficult. The devastation for Romain Grosjean, though, throwing away what probably would have ended up being fourth place, I suppose, possibly even a podium, who's to say, was pretty almost surreal, and certainly for Haas, considering they've come away from this weekend with no points, despite having so far this season a consistently competitive car.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's starting to build up on Grosjean. He's not scored a point yet this year in those four races, and he, like you say, they've been so quick, and he's been running so high. It's not like he's been ninth or tenth and missed out on one or two. They were fourth and fifth, I think, in Australia, and like you say, he was up there again here. And for so many spells of that race, he was basically shadowing Perez that you thought, yeah, there's big points on offer. And I was impressed then, because he's had a pretty disjointed weekend. He does obviously struggle on the brakes sometimes, and he'd seen a lot of the escape roads, Roman, during practice. So I was impressed with the way he was handling it. And then to make such an error, I mean, we've seen it every now and then with a driver making a mistake behind the safety car, warming their tyres. I mean, Valtteri did it last year in China in the wet. But one, that was in the wet, and two, that didn't put it in the wall. He lost positions, but it was silly. But for Roman and his experience, you just can't make that mistake. And it was, I said on commentary that hitting your teammate is probably the most stupid thing you can do with the two Red Bull drivers. But I said it was a very close second what Grosjean did from where he was, and it was. In one sense heartbreaking, because afterwards you see the disappointment and hear it, but he only had himself to blame for that one, and I believe he was in tears after qualifying when he'd had his gearbox issue, which I don't know if that's because there was more to it than just the gearbox letting him down, and maybe there was, you know, some driver influence and that's why he was so upset. But to be sat, you know, behind a barrier with tears in your eyes after being eliminated in qualifying because of a technical issue, I was surprised by. So his mindset didn't seem quite right from Saturday evening onwards. So then to be in the position he was in was maybe even more impressive, but then to throw it away was maybe should have been more expected.
Before we talk about the driver of the day and wrap this thing up after an impressive race for Sauber, of all teams, I briefly want to mention Stoffel Vandoorne. He had a reasonable race, as he tends to do these days, but there was one particularly clever strategy call that it seems like was on him from the cockpit rather than from the pit wall. Behind that second safety car, he waited to make his final pit stop right before racing resumed, because knowing, as we've said before, how hard tyre warm-up is on this circuit, he stopped for a new set, or it was a used set of Ultrasoft tyres in any case, that had been in their tyre blankets to give himself an advantage in grip in the last couple of laps. And I mean, that's certainly in this race a level of ingenuity we hadn't seen.
Yeah, I was quite pleased when I saw him come in and do it, and I noticed what he was doing. It was one of those where the penny dropped and you thought, good move. And not only was it because it meant the tyres had been warmer in the blankets, but by pitting then, obviously, the field had moved on a bit and he could go quicker on that lap round to rejoin them. So he was able to get more heat into them out on track as well. So it was a bit of a double whammy, and it worked out for him. And yeah, I mean, the McLaren was not a particularly competitive car around here, although Alonso did a good job with a damaged one to finish up in the top seven again. But yeah, that was a clever move, because nobody else did it and you could see the benefit. As soon as he did it, you suddenly thought, oh yeah, that's why he's done that. So I imagine there was a lot of strategists up and down the pit wall going, we could have done that. So if you look at some of the guys that were outside the top 10, like Magnussen, Gasly, Ericsson, who had also unlapped themselves, they were able to do a lap at a quicker speed to rejoin the field, and they'll have seen the benefit from warming the tyres up a bit more. So yeah, maybe a few more of them should have taken that gamble, but they'll remember that for the next time the opportunity presents itself.
I like that slowly we're uncovering all these ideas, and eventually we'll get to the point where everyone will know everything about Baku and it'll be boring again, but for the time being we could enjoy it. We'll wrap this up with a word, of course, for the man who was voted driver of the day. It's always impressive when it's not Max Verstappen who gets driver of the day, given the location of the voters, but Charles Leclerc, who scored his debut F1 points and a good points haul for Sauber as well, in sixth place. And just an example, sort of as we saw with Lance Stroll last year, of a driver keeping his head down and just sort of getting on with it, keeping his nose clean, which is very impressive for this racetrack in particular, seeing how chaotic things are. And I think a pretty good race for him in the sense that he's had some messy occasions so far this season. He's made those kind of rookie errors that, as a rookie, he of course would make, but I think this kind of drive was really important for him to get together.
Yeah, it was. This is a poignant venue for Charles, actually, because last year he came here and it was less than a week, I think, after his dad had died, and he went and put the thing on pole and dominated the first race and then nearly won the second race as well in Formula 2. Massively impressive weekend from him. And coming back here, you know, he was a name that people knew that had seen last year's Formula 2 race because of how much he stood out. So for him to then go and do it in the Formula 1 race as well was hugely impressive. And as you say, it's difficult to have a clean race. I guess, yeah, Leclerc is probably the only driver aside from Bottas who can reflect on his afternoon and go, I didn't make any mistakes, I didn't do anything wrong. And there was a point at the restart, though, I spoke to him afterwards and I said, you know, what did you think then? Because you were comfortably in the points and you knew you had four laps to sprint to the finish, and it probably felt like it could only go wrong, you know, that you had to keep it clean for what was going to be a chaotic finish. And he said, yeah, there was a lot of pressure. And then he suddenly went, but then I could see cars in front of me I could overtake as well. So he was trying to rein himself in to not overdo it, because of course one of those cars was Vettel, and you know, this is a Ferrari young driver. So on the one hand, you don't want to screw up Ferrari's race and do something silly, but on the other, if you go in in a Sauber, jump ahead of Sebastian Vettel in the race, you're going to look like a hero. So he had a lot to contend with in that sense, and I think he judged it really well. And yeah, there were big points for Sauber. They've got a good team there that races well and seems to create opportunities for itself sometimes, and that opportunity was created, and Charles certainly took it. So really impressive from him, because it is only his fourth race. Like you say, he's made a few mistakes, and you think it reminds you that he's a rookie, and then a performance like that reminds you of why he's in Formula One.
Yeah, a big race from him, and it was a big race in general. Another unpredictable Azerbaijan Grand Prix. A lot of drivers thought they deserved to win it, and the one who thought he didn't ended up winning it. It was Lewis Hamilton, and we all look forward to coming back to Baku next year. It's been a pleasure to look back on the race with you, Chris.
Thank you very much. It was a fun weekend, and good to go over it again.
That was Chris Medland from Racer. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast. Make sure you get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you normally get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review to help other F1 fans find the show. You can also read the written report at f1strategyreport.com and stay up to date by finding us on Facebook and Twitter. My name's Michael Amanato. You can find me at Michael Amanato on Twitter. And I'll catch you in 2 weeks' time for a wrap-up of the Spanish Grand Prix. We'll be right back.